Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. What a coincidence that I found this show. We're talking big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%, always with small and mid-sized nonprofits in mind. Last week, we were minimizing money management mayhem, what UPMIFA means for your CEO, your CFO, and your board. Kathy Boyle of Chapin Hill Advisors distilled the requirements of UPMIFA for nonprofits in the 47 states where the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act is law. This week, we have Sasha Dichter in the studio. Sasha is in charge of business development for Acumen Fund, a nonprofit that invests patient capital in enterprises that combat poverty. He's also a popular blogger and speaker. We're going to hear how Acumen's work and Sasha's body of personal work can translate to lessons for your nonprofit and your own career and your own personal motivation. At 32 minutes after the hour, it'll be Tony's Take Two. Fundraisers, is your multitasking turning people off? Share a blog post with you that was based on an experience I had in the last couple of weeks with a couple of multitaskers while I was on the phone with them. And this is not really only for fundraisers, but that's who my blog post was directed to. And also, we are media partners for Next Gen Charity 2011. That's going to be in Town Hall in November of this year, and I'll talk more about that. Both of those on Tony's Take Two, roughly 32 minutes after the hour. We're taking a break now, and then after this break, Sasha Dichter with the Acumen Fund. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Tony Martinetti, host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. I'm joined now by Sasha Dichter. Sasha is the Director of Business Development for Acumen Fund, where he leads a team that puts him, as he says, puts his head on the table to raise capital for Acumen Fund, and we're going to talk about where that capital goes. Before Acumen, Sasha worked as Global Manager of Corporate Citizenship at GE Money. His responsibility there was expanding financial offerings to underserved communities globally. And also he had worked as senior program manager at IBM, spearheading the company's corporate citizenship strategy. He's also a popular blogger. You'll find his blog at sashadichter.wordpress.com, and he blogs on generosity, philanthropy, and social change. I'm very glad that his work at Acumen and his personal body of work bring him to the studio and to the show. Sasha, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
It's a pleasure to have you. Let's talk about Acumen Fund to start. Why don't you explain why it's unusual among nonprofits?
Sure. Well, Acumen Fund is a nonprofit venture capital fund. Whenever you say that to someone, they say, well, what does that mean? Yeah. So what we do is we take philanthropy, we're incorporated as a 501c3, and then we turn around and make patient capital investments in companies that are serving the poor in India and Pakistan and sub-Saharan Africa.
Explain patient capital. We have on the show, we have Jargon Jail.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't I want to parole you quickly from Jargon Jail. What is patient capital?
I appreciate that. So the idea is that given that the problems of the world and the problems of poverty, you're going to count the number of people who don't have safe drinking water, don't have sanitation, don't have access to healthcare in the hundreds of millions of people, if not billions. How are we going to solve these problems with philanthropy alone? And we feel like at Acumen Fund, that's not the only tool that we have in our tool chest. And so patient capital investing is saying, can we take the freedom and the flexibility and the risk appetite that philanthropy can have, but then turn around and make debt or equity investments in companies that themselves are directly serving the poor?
But the support is not only financial.
That's right. So we spend a lot of time working with these companies. So, you know, to give a typical example, in 2004, there was a company in India that was interested in providing safe drinking water to people in villages. They had a system whereby they could purify water very quickly.
Was that Water Health International?
That's right, Water Health International. Yeah. And so Water Health International had a way, what they wanted to do was charge low-income people in rural India a very reasonable rate for safe and clean drinking water. And rather than do this as a nonprofit, they wanted to do this as a for-profit company. So Acumen Fund found that company and got to know them when they had a couple of their systems. Each system serves an entire village of a few thousand people. And rather than make a grant to them, we made a $600,000 equity investment in the company. So we owned a part of the company. And with that ownership stake, we had a huge investment in helping them to succeed. So we took an individual from our team, sent them to work very closely with Water Health International, and really rolled up their sleeves and was side by side with them.
And who are some of the people, or what types of expertise are you providing?
You know, it really will depend on the company and what their needs are. It could be, you know, very often there's needs for financial and accounting expertise, marketing and sales, operations. You know, one of our companies in India needs to go from about 100 employees to about 2,000 employees in the next couple of years. So we either try to provide that directly, try to provide a service provider that they can find locally, or we have a very broad network of supporters and advisors who bring a lot of expertise to the table.
And clearly those are the elements of venture capital.
That's right.
That you're infusing into the nonprofit model.
That's right. And it's not to say that, you know, many traditional nonprofits don't also roll up their sleeves tremendously with their grantees. But these are businesses that themselves are more often than not charging the end customers a small amount and to make the business work. And our hope is that over time, the revenues from the business will replace the funding that we're providing as the main source of capital to help it grow.
So you gave the example of water health in India. Why don't you share the example of toileting in Kenya?
Sure. A gentleman named David Correa, who himself actually had worked at a nonprofit called Practical Action for a number of years, was in the sanitation space. And we had gotten to know David over a period of years and met him at some conferences. And he was very excited about the idea of creating a for-profit business and was talking to Acumen Fund about kind of finding an entrepreneur who would be interested in doing this. And of course, what we understood over time was that David was that entrepreneur. And so what David started doing was building toilets in downtown Nairobi, both in the central business district and in the slums, because there's very, very limited access to sanitation. Diarrheal death kills literally millions of kids a year. Mm. And so he wanted to, in his own words, make sanitation sexy by, you know, talking to, you know, public officials. We're going to put bright, clean, beautiful toilets with piped-in music, and everybody's going to go in there and really change the conversation around what was possible in sanitation. So he's built at least 30 of these toilets throughout Nairobi. They were used 6 million times just last year. Acumen Fund had made a loan to David's to company, which is called EcoTact, and the toilets are called Eco Toilets, of about $700,000, which was, you know, a very, you know, very risky loan at the time. But the success has been, you know, incredible. David has been nominated and named as the African Entrepreneur of the Year for 2010, I believe. So it's something that's been, you know, really wildly successful beyond, you know, our hopes and our aspirations, and has really started to change the conversation about what's possible in terms of providing large-scale sanitation solutions in Kenya.
Scalable and innovative.
Scalable and innovative, and lots of interesting business models that go around the toilets. So he's got a shoeshine business, you know, he was renting out space. So lots of different revenue streams. And at the same time, really trying to figure out how to make this model work all across the income spectrum. So whether it's in downtown Nairobi near the government offices or in the slums, whether in Mathari Valley, which is one of the toughest slums globally, to try to find a way where instead of paying every time to use the toilets, you can pay for every month to make it more affordable.
Those are examples in India and Kenya. How much does Acumen Fund have invested currently around the world?
So globally, it's about $55 million, and our average investment is about $1 to $1.5 million, so it's in about 40 different enterprises. And through our own metrics, we can say that they've created a total of about 30,000 jobs globally, and about, you know, somewhere between 20 and 25 million people have been affected by the work.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and when we return with Sasha, we'll talk about his responsibilities at Acumen, and then, of course, diving into his personal body of work. So stay with us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind over matter, health and fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind over matter, health and fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Welcome back. I'm with Sasha Dichter, in charge of business development for Acumen Fund and a blogger and popular speaker. Sasha, the responsibilities that you have at Acumen as director of business development, explain what you're up to.
Sure. As you mentioned in the bio, my head is on the chopping block for the resources we're able to mobilize to support our work. So I'm in charge of all fundraising, primarily philanthropy. I work with a guy on our investing team. We'd raise a little bit of invested capital as well. And then everything that has to do with our presence online. And, you know, broadly speaking, what I really think of myself being responsible for is the health and vibrancy and level of connection with our community, starting with our partners who are core funders and moving out to chapters that we have and other people who are, you know, advisors and the like, who are closely connected to Acumen Fund's work.
How much money is Acumen raising in a year?
These days we're raising about $15 to $20 million. From 2007 to 2008, we did a big growth campaign where we raised about $100 million over 2 years. So, based on the reflection that it's so hard to grow a nonprofit, and if you want to think about a 5-year growth plan, rather than raising it year to year to year, if you could raise a large amount of capital to grow an idea that was really working, that would give you the perspective and the ability to plan for the long term. Mm.
And when did Acumen start its work?
Acumen was founded in 2001. It's actually our 10-year anniversary this year. And so we're going to be celebrating that in early November in New York, and we're excited about that.
So it's significant, I think. Your title is not Director of Institutional Advancement or Director of Development. Well, but Director of Business Development. So it has... clearly, as I mentioned, and you explained, Acumen has this business and venture capital mission, really, and core to it. But your title just, I think, is reflecting that, Director of Business Development.
Sure. I mean, you know, the title predated me, but I asked my readers to think of a word better than fundraising, because I had said that I think it didn't have a whole lot of mojo. I came originally from the for-profit sector, and have had a lot of conversations about, you know, what's the difference between sales and business development. And business development really is about creating long-term partnerships. So if you're a startup company, your business development relationships are going to be with a supplier or somebody who's writing software. But these are long, long-term relationships that are of mutual benefit. And I like that concept a lot, of how the relationship can be between a philanthropic funder and a nonprofit organization. So I think the title works.
And every nonprofit wants those kinds of relationships, of course.
They do. And I do think, I mean, there's nothing particularly wrong about the title of fundraising per se. It just has gotten a lot of baggage over the years. So it's a little tough to shake that off.
So what do you think of sort of lessons that more traditional nonprofits can take away from Acumen's work, maybe in terms of risk-taking, but I don't want to put words in your mouth either.
I mean, I think from Acumen Fund's work, I think there's a lot that others can learn from us. I think there's a lot that we can learn from others.
Okay, sure.
But for us, what we want to be open to is the broadest array of solutions that we can bring to bear on a problem. It happens that we take a patient capital investing approach because we think that has a lot of potential to help things really grow. But a lot of nonprofits and a lot of social problems are not going to be solved with that kind of capital. They'll be solved with grant capital. I think that the lessons that I have found most instructive for me at Acumen Fund is starting with this community and starting with the way in which they are connected to our work in a very, very profound way from the earliest days of Acumen Fund, and really that they are part of the organization. This idea of separation between the kind of the funders and the organization is something that we've really tried to do away with from day one. And I think that that's incredibly powerful. And that's what a philanthropist is ideally looking for, is to have a full expression of themselves through their philanthropy, through their money, through their help, through their rolling up their sleeves, and through really feeling that they are part of the organization.
I'm jumping a little ahead, but you blogged about something that reminds me exactly of what you're talking about, the semi-permeable organization, and how defining what the organization is at any day or any month can be very different.
That's right. And it's a term that I borrowed from Nico Kanner, who was a partner at Katzenbach Partners, which is a wonderful consulting firm based in New York, now part of Booz Allen. And Nico really shared this idea with us originally about the virtual organization. That was his term, to say that, you know, the people who are on the payroll of Acumen Fund or of on any nonprofit are not the only people who are doing the work of the organization by any stretch of the imagination. But when you shift your thinking to think it's not us who are doing the work and them who are funding us, but instead think of this is this work that we're engaged in together, then you start to behave very, very differently. Then you start to, when you're reaching out to funders, you don't treat them with kid gloves, right? When you're having conversations with them, the dialogue, the tone, you know, what if this is a peer that I'm working with fully? How do I talk to them that then, rather than, oh, let me tell this donor, you know, the things that they want to hear? I think it's an easy trap to fall into because it's hard to raise money.
And it's also easy to define yourself in fixed terms.
It is very much tougher. You know, I mean, the early days of Acumen Fund, and really our founder is a woman named Jacqueline Novogratz, and she wrote a book called The Blue Sweater, which talks really about her journey towards creating Acumen Fund. And when she's talking about that, you know, it was created out of the Rockefeller Foundation with a $5 million founding grant, but very quickly was funded by a group of 20 founding partners of Acumen Fund, who provided the seed capital to start the organization. And in the early days, those people, I mean, there were more of them than there were of us, you know. Mm-hmm. So when we would get them together for our annual investor gathering, it would be as many of them as could come, and sort of the few people who worked at Acumen Fund, and we kind of throw every problem on the wall and say, hey, you know, how would you tackle this? How would you tackle that? Now, obviously, we've grown as an organization. There's probably, you know, 70 people who work for Acumen Fund, and our partner community has grown to nearly 300 people. So our investor gatherings have gotten less intimate and more professional, kind of by necessity. But that spirit really pervades the organization from the early days, and we really recognize that it is from those people and their vision for what we could create that the organization was born.
I'm with Sasha Dichter. He's Director of Business Development at Acumen Fund, and you'll find that at acumenfund.org. He's also a popular blogger and speaker, and you'll find his blog at sashadichter.wordpress.com, and his last name is spelled D-I-C-H-T-E-R. So let's move a little to your personal branding, I guess, before we get to your body of work. I think traditional nonprofits would be a little intimidated maybe by someone who spends so much time and developing a personal brand and has a personal voice, as you do in your popular blog. Acumen obviously doesn't feel that way. Let's not talk about the tension. Any reflection there on what someone who has a personal brand brings to an organization that also has its own brand?
Sure. You know, it's interesting when you use those two different words. I'm very excited about the idea of having a personal voice and kind of not particularly interested in having a personal brand.
Okay.
The story was, you know, very organic. I had been traveling to India and Pakistan for Acumen Fund work, had seen some interesting things. We had a blog. We continue to have a blog. Acumen Fund's blog is a wonderful blog about the work that we're doing and the work in the sector. And as part of that trip, I wrote a few blog posts. And they got put on Acumen Fund's blog, but then a few other folks, you know, from a magazine in India and the like, wanted to repost them. That kind of got my attention. And Seth Godin is a blogger, thinker, marketer, advisor to Acumen Fund, wonderful, wonderful friend. His blog is very inspirational to lots and lots of people. And so that was in my mind as well. And so I kind of started blogging, really without much of a plan. And it's easy to start blogging in the beginning because, you know, your mother reads, and my wife might have read a little bit. I mean, it kind of felt like there are about 12 different people who are reading. But then over time, it started to become more important. And in the process of doing it, I figured out what it was and why I was doing it. So it wasn't, it was easier because it was a small decision in the beginning. And to your original question, I think that having, you know, we all have this opportunity to have a voice in the work that we do. And I think, again, going back to this question of, you know, fundraising and how fundraising works in the context of a nonprofit, it's very, very easy to pigeonhole the kind of the fundraising group into this little corner of this necessary evil that has to happen for the real work to happen. And I think one of the things that's been very different about the way we have approached this is that, you know, no holds barred, that's just not the way we think about it at all. And so how do you, if you're going to be a person who's responsible for helping philanthropists put their philanthropy to work in a productive way, you need to really be able to have a powerful, substantive conversation with those people. And I feel like this all kind of is reinforcing.
Right. A lot of that conversation is your own personal voice.
Right. That's right.
And you've been blogging now 3 years, roughly 3 years. And your voice emerges. As you said, it's easier in the beginning, but over time, you find your space, right?
That's right. And I do think it's been organic. You know, it's not a lot of time, actually. You know, I live in Westchester County. I take the train home every day, and that's the, you know, I have 27 minutes to write a blog post, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And that's actually good. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, I grew up playing classical piano for many, many years. And so I knew when I woke up in the morning that before I went to bed at night, I'd have to practice the piano for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours. So I think I grew up a little bit with that mindset and that discipline. So it's very easy to wake up in the morning and say, oh, well, one of the things I need to do before I go to bed is write a post. And that comes a little bit naturally as well. But, you know, you get better at everything over time. And there's no doubt that I feel the way that I'm blogging, the ease with which I'm doing it, my understanding of what a post is and what it isn't, for me, has evolved just by doing the work. And I think more often than not, that's the best learning, at least for me.
I think a lot of what you're saying is subsumed in one of your more recent posts, which was have personality. Don't be afraid to show your personality. It was a great picture on that blog post. And again, you'll find Sasha's blog at sashadichter.wordpress.com. Talk about personality. Have a personality.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was at Fairway Market. There's one now in Pelham. I grew up on the Upper West Side of New York City, so I remember Fairway from forever. And they had a coffee grinder that said, you can put your organic coffee beans in here, but it also will be mixed with non-organic coffee. You know, these machines are really expensive, and this is getting a little ridiculous. And I thought, you know, we, as marketers, as communicators, as CEOs of nonprofits, our hope every single day is to stand out, because there's so much noise and there's so much volume and there's so much stuff coming at people. Yet I think there's this fear of messing up by speaking in an honest voice. And so we hide behind the way we think that we're supposed to speak and supposed to communicate. And it's risky, because if you speak in your very honest voice, you might say something you're not supposed to say.
Well, your post says piss people off. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, the days of, you know, getting, you know, mass attention for your work, especially if you're working in a nonprofit, are behind us, and they kind of always been. But once you let go of that idea of appealing to everybody, you have the opportunity to appeal to a small group of people and make them rabid fans. And rabid fans can only be rabid if there's something to be rabid about. You know, so I loved this and I hated this was going to start a conversation, whereas I didn't remember this, you know, it's not really any help.
Do you think your personal voice would have emerged if you were still at GE Money or IBM or the consultant Booz?
No. I mean, no. I probably in a different way. Probably in a different way. I mean, I think one of the joys of working in a nonprofit that everybody feels is that they can bring their whole selves to work. So I think part of the reason is institutional. You know, I mean, when I was at GE, there was limits on what websites you could access. So to say that,
let alone what you could contribute to.
Let alone what you could contribute to. But I think more importantly, I think that my own voice has emerged as a result of having such a strong connection between what I believe in and what I'd like to see the world be like and my day job. And my day job is an all-day job and an all-night job, because I love it and I'm so passionate about it. So I think that the one of the many opportunities people have at nonprofits, which again, doesn't always seem to play out, is we have a different value proposition to give to people who come to work for us, because we can't pay as much as everybody else, but people are putting their whole selves into that. And that's something that, you know, doesn't happen at a really big company. And so how do we use that in a very genuine way to make this work more meaningful and make us able to attract the best talent, which I really think we need to do and I think we deserve.
And because the missions are so compelling.
But I think what often, I know for me, and I specifically remember when I was deciding to leave GE, what I was deciding to do is leave the private sector. And there's this tremendous fear that you'll kind of cross this threshold and never go back. And my fear wasn't about not going back for sort of the obvious reasons. I was worried that I would never find a professional environment that was as stimulating, as challenging, as fast-paced as what I was looking for. And to the contrary, I mean, Acumen Fund is more stimulating and more challenging and more fast-paced. And what you want to say in terms of cliches is, oh, it feels like a private company or, you know, a startup. But I don't think those labels serve us at all. What it is an incredibly compelling and challenging place to work. And that, I think, is what people are looking for. And there's no reason why every nonprofit that has a passionate, great leader and that can bring people together around that mission cannot feel as exciting, as dynamic as any other place, and in fact, more so.
And no reason that every person who has a passion, which we all do, right, and a dream, shouldn't pursue it. I mean, you even had a mentor discourage you from going into fundraising.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's probably a longer story, but absolutely. I mean, there's this incredible stigma, and you know look at the back of the Chronicle of Philanthropy or any kind of nonprofit job board, and the only jobs that are available are fundraising jobs, because nobody wants to do that work. And I always found that, you know, curious and compelling, because where I had just come from, you know, the CEO of GE, Jeff Immelt, came up through sales. Mm. The CEO of San Palmisano of IBM came up through sales. You go across the Fortune 50, Fortune 100, Fortune 500, most CEOs come up through sales roles, because the job of the CEO is to understand the customer and to be able to communicate with the customer and meet that customer's needs. Yet somehow in the nonprofit sector, nobody feels like being the head of development is a pathway to running a nonprofit. And so, you know, I think that we need to really rethink a lot of these things.
Sasha is reading my mind, because after this break and after Tony's Take Two, we're going to talk about his manifesto for nonprofit CEOs, the first line of which is, I'm sick of apologizing for being in charge of raising money. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, Tony's Take Two, and then more with Sasha Dichter. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's roughly 32 minutes after the hour. It's time for Tony's Take Two. Multitasking. I wrote a blog post asking fundraisers, do you seek us to suffer seven symptoms of selfish multitasking? Fans of the show will know that I'm a fan of alliterations. Multitasking. I had the sort of really unpleasant experience of being on the phone on two calls recently in the same week with professional fundraisers. And these were prearranged calls, so not a surprise. And the people were clearly doing other things while I was on the phone with them. Their papers were shuffling, but not related to the call. Keyboards were clicking, and there were sounds of computing, you know, chimes and things. And that was pretty off-putting. And it happened twice in a week. And I mentioned that those were prearranged calls. I really don't think that matters. If you pick up the phone, I think the person who's calling deserves your attention. So it doesn't really matter that they were prearranged or not. It just, I think, probably makes it a little worse that they were scheduled calls. So I just want you to be conscious of the attention you're not giving people when you're multitasking, and especially if your profession is fundraising, where your objective is to be building strong, meaningful relationships based on sincerity and honesty, I think you're being insincere and dishonest to people if you're not giving them your attention, but sort of think you're getting away with it under the guise of productivity. So just be careful about multitasking. And again, the blog post was, do you seek us to suffer seven symptoms of selfish multitasking? And my blog is at mpgadv.com. Also want you to know that we are going to be media partners for the Next Gen Charity 2011 conference. That's on November 17th and 18th. This year it's going to be at the Town Hall Theater in New York City, a much bigger venue. I've had as guests, and we'll have again, the two co-founders, Ari Tiemann and Jonah Halper. Interviewed them at the inaugural conference last year, and we'll have them on the show leading up to this year's conference. But we're very pleased that Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio will be a media partner for NextGen's second conference, 2011. That is Tony's Take Two for Friday, March 11th. Back with Sasha Dichter, director of business development at the Acumen Fund and a popular blogger and speaker. Acumen Fund is at acumenfund.org, and Sasha's blog is at sashadichter.wordpress.com. Sasha, before the break, you had an inspirational and mind-reading moment. You're leading into where I wanted to go next, which was your manifesto for nonprofit CEOs. And the first sentence in it is, "I'm sick of apologizing for being in charge of raising money." What's the problem that caused you to write the manifesto?
Well, you know, it was a funny story, and again, you know, one thing leading to another. But I had been on the road for, you know, the better part of a month, and I was coming back from the Social Capital Markets inaugural conference, the SOCAP conference in San Francisco, and I was probably, this was before there was Wi-Fi on the plane, probably halfway through kind of emailing people and catching up, and I was just exhausted. And so I started reading Seth Godin's book, I guess 2 books ago, Tribes. And as I was reading along, kind of on page 100 or so, he said, you know, that the concept of the book is that the subheading is, "We need you to lead us." So the idea is that anybody can really lead a tribe, and the tribe is a group of people who have shared common interests or passions, and that with the internet and our ability to connect with people directly, that is easier than ever to find tribes, identify them, and lead them. And so somewhere along the way, when describing that, Seth writes, you should write a manifesto. And I think at any other moment in any other day, I would have looked at that and thought, well, that's a really good idea. I should do that at some point. But because I was at 35,000 feet and I was just spent on doing anything else, I kind of closed the book and opened up my laptop and started writing. And what poured out of me was this manifesto that basically came fully formed, but really was the result of 2 years of the experience of doing this job. As I came into the role, never having thought about doing this kind of work, mm-hmm. Always wanted to be in the nonprofit space, but, you know, being a fundraiser, I remember there was a guy back when I was doing consulting who had, at Booz Allen, who was a salesperson before he became a consultant, and he kind of sold copiers door to door. You know, this was a guy at 10 PM after we had worked, you know, for 15 straight hours would, you know, go to the bar and I'd kind of go to my room. You know, I thought that you have to be, you know, to be a sales guy, you have to be the kind of guy who went to a bar at 10 PM because you're just so thrived on that kind of social interaction 24/7. When I came to Acumen Fund, I was, you know, excited and somewhat petrified by the idea of fundraising. And I think I talked myself into the idea that I could do everything but the actual fundraising piece, right? I could support our dynamic CEO and I could work with our board. I could do everything. And I'd never actually have to sit across from someone who could write us a check and ask them to write a check to us, which is an incredible delusion, kind of gargantuan proportions. And it's true, my mentor at the time, when I was talking to him about taking this role, just said, "Don't do it. Because once you go into the nonprofit space, if you start being a fundraiser, you'll never stop being a fundraiser." And when I got there, our CEO, Jacqueline Novogratz, we were just kicking off this, what was a $60 million fundraising campaign, became a $100 million campaign. And Jacqueline kept saying to me over the first 6 months, "You know, we're going to reinvent fundraising. Fundraising in the nonprofit sector is broken, and we're going to fix it and do it in a totally different way." And I remember continually sort of nodding and saying, "Yeah, yeah, absolutely." And what I was thinking was, I had no idea at all what she was talking about. But, you know, what are you going to do but say yes? And only at the, you know, I guess it was in 2008, so 2 years in, when we had raised kind of the 80 of the $100 million, did it click? And did I have something to say about how fundraising is broken and how we need to think about it? And my dream was that this manifesto would be read by literally every nonprofit CEO out there and every member, and that they would use it as a tool to hand to members of their board to just flip this whole thing about how we think about fundraising and mobilizing capital. Because I think it's our attitudes that are really holding us back.
And what are some of those bad attitudes?
The attitudes are that, you know, fundraising is separate from the core mission. The attitudes are that you have to be apologetic because somebody, you know, somebody has a lot of money and you don't. And so there's this power dynamic of, you know, kind of tin cupping and going to someone saying, "Please, would you support this cause?"
Humble and apologetic fundraising.
Humble and apologetic instead of, you know, pounding the table and saying, "I have devoted my life to this work. That's how valuable I think it is. And I'm going to try to explain to you why it's my passion. And I hope it'll become your passion. If it doesn't, then you should go find your own." But not this sort of, you know, supplicant relationship where a funder is someone who is more likely significantly more wealthy than, you know, the person working at the nonprofit, maybe has more access, maybe has, you know, all these sorts of things that we bring into that ourselves. Whereas most funders are not looking for that kind of relationship at all. Most funders are looking for authentic, genuine relationships where they can take their financial capital and use it effectively to solve important problems and express themselves through that. So if anything, I think the fault is with us in kind of creating that dynamic or thinking that that's the dynamic we need to create, rather than creating a relationship that is generative between an organization that's doing really powerful work and an individual who wants to create a lot of change.
And how stifling of our own passion it can be when it's that supplicant senior relationship.
That's right.
Your passion won't come out.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that people are looking for that. I mean, it's so incredibly difficult, unless you have, months and months and years are going to sit on a board to really, truly understand, at a level of detail that's totally necessary, how effective a nonprofit is versus another is so hard. When you sit across from a potential funder, you are the brand, you are everything, you are that nonprofit. And through you and through your passion and through how you can describe what's being done, a lot of the decision about whether or not to fund is going to be based on that. So the idea that you'd put anybody but the best person in your organization in front of the potential donor is, again, very, very broken.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that there aren't fabulous, wonderful, great fundraisers out there. There are thousands of them. I learn from them every day. But I think as a sector, there is a little bit of a pathology of fundraising is this necessary thing that we wish we didn't have to do.
Mm-hmm. You, in bringing out your own personal voice and your personality, created something called Generosity Day. Why don't you tell us what Generosity Day was about?
Well, it was, I was honored to get to speak at Social Media Week together with the CEO of Malaria No More and Katja Andreessen, who writes a nonprofit marketing blog, which if anybody who's listening doesn't read Katja's blog, you should read Katja's blog, and Ellen McGirt, who's a writer for Fast Company. I had done a generosity experiment in the end of 2009, where in the beginning part of that month, as I was rushing home to work, a guy in the subway asked me for money, and I didn't give him money, which I often don't do, because I feel like, intellectually, I can justify why I should give to a homeless shelter rather than to a person. And I just felt like I'd done the wrong thing. And I felt like I'm going through the world talking about social change. I'm going through the world asking people to themselves be generous. And was I being true to that way that I wanted to live? And I felt like I just wasn't. And so the next day I announced a generosity experiment to spend the entire month of December saying yes to everybody who asked me for anything, particularly anybody asking for help, people on the street, musicians, whatever the case may be. My goal was to practice a different reaction in myself. So to have it become reflexive that if somebody comes to me and looks me in the eye and says, I need your help, the first thing that I would think is I'm going to say yes, because I think I'd gotten to a point where analytically, intellectually, I thought, there's always a good reason to say no.
And the reflex was no. Right.
And so I wanted to change that reflex. And, I find the only way that I can change myself is to do the same thing over and over again. And so that was the idea of the generosity experiment. And I always had this sense that it could be something bigger and not just about me and something that I'd shared with my readers. So that morning, as I was going to Social Media Week, I had started thinking about, well, maybe we should have a generosity day for everyone. But it was kind of one of these latent thoughts, and I emailed my team, and I think that they, got the email and thought, we have real work to do.
Sasha's at it again.
Yeah. And so I went to the panel, and I was talking to Katja after the panel, and I said, I think we need to do this thing. At some point, what do you think of the idea? And she said, I think it's great, and I think we should do it on Valentine's Day. And I said, well, isn't that 3 days away? It was, Friday at 11, and, Valentine's Day was Monday.
Monday, yeah.
And she said, a mentor of mine has been pushing me to act more and to think less, and I think you should do it. So fast forward, ran back to the office. I started emailing people. My team started emailing a wonderful group of folks that they had gotten to know through a website that they had launched called searchfortheobvious.com, which is another great conversation for us to have. And then over time, over the course of that day and over the course of the weekend, it completely exploded. And the idea was, let's reboot Valentine's Day as Generosity Day, and let's make it not just about romantic love, but about love for everyone and connection to everyone. And if we can spend the whole day being generous, that would be the truest expression of love. And so we threw this out onto the web, to my readers, to lots of other folks. People, Fast Company wrote an article, Huffington Post, Jonathan Greenblatt wrote a wonderful piece. And it got blogged, something like 55 different articles were written, about 4,000 different tweets, Nick Kristof, Alyssa Milano, millions and millions of people saw this. And the most exciting thing to me was people started tweeting, here's what I did to be generous, or here I saw this act of generosity. And we sort of did it in 72 hours. We, for, a few million people, created Generosity Day as Valentine's Day. And, you know, we're going to do it again next year.
After this, we're going to come back and talk about exactly what Sasha's describing and what he calls in his blog collective effervescence. This is Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, with Sasha Dichter. Stay with us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind over matter, health and fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind over matter, health and fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back. I'm with Sasha Dichter, Director of Business Development for Acumen Fund and a popular blogger and speaker. And we're just continuing the conversation about his experiment, Generosity Day, which was on Valentine's Day 2010. Sasha, before the break, you were talking about what you later called 2 weeks in a blog post 2 weeks later. You used the term collective effervescence around this idea that people want to belong.
That's right. So, you know, last week I got to be at the TED conference in California, and there's a guy named Tony Salvador who is an anthropologist who works at Intel, and he studies pilgrimages. And he said that his experience, even coming to a pilgrimage as an observer, is impossible not to be taken up and swept away by what he called this collective effervescence, this joy that the pilgrims experience when they get to a holy site. And then, you know, later in the day, a guy named Aaron Koblin was talking about his work online, a bunch of really incredible things, but getting people all over the world to participate virtually in some sort of task. I mean, Aaron first had 10,000 people draw sheep, and then he made this kind of piece of artwork. Mm. And now he's done this beautiful video of In Memory of Johnny Cash, where Johnny Cash fans each drew an individual cell that was picture that was played at 8 frames a second to make a 3-minute video. And what I realized, what was amazing to me about Generosity Day was first that it spread so well and so quickly. So clearly it was tapping into something. And I think the tapping in is, I think people want to do good, but they kind of don't feel like they have permission to, or just feel like they're so busy in their daily lives that they're not really sure where it fits in. So there was this need that I think the day tapped into rather than created. And I was fascinated by this because I thought of this people all over the country who heard about this idea in a tweet or in a blog post or something and changed the way they acted. And I think the way they changed, why they changed is because they felt like they were part of something bigger than themselves. And I think that notion of collective effervescence is interesting because the worry about the web is that it's so impersonal. You know, your Facebook friends aren't real friends. And I think that's a real risk. But at the same time, the fact that an idea can spread and can give people around the world a sense of connection to something bigger than themselves is incredibly powerful. And I think we as nonprofits, if we act the right way and we really understand this medium, have this potential to create a level of connection to our work and to one another that is incredibly powerful.
What do you think holds people back from executing on their own dreams?
That's a hard question. I mean, I think that, you know, at least I think there's a lot of fear of,
well, we talked about fear of failure.
Fear of failure, fear of starting.
Seth Godin talks a lot about
that. Seth talks a lot about that. I mean, I think that it's you know, we don't spend a lot of time working on our dreams. I don't think we're necessarily feel like we're supposed to work on our dreams.
Working on them. But I think there are a lot of people, regrettably, who spend time thinking about them and not working on them and not executing.
Well, I mean, it's difficult to figure out where your dreams fit into, you know, your life and your responsibilities and all these sorts of things. And so I think that it's, at least to me, where things have gone the best is when I've talked myself into taking the first step. Or told somebody I was going to take the first step before I was ready to. You know, so even with Generosity Day, I specifically remember emailing folks, some of whom I knew well and some of whom I didn't know, saying, we're launching Generosity Day on Monday. You know, sorry, it's only 2 days away. We'd love your help. And my hands, you know, physically kind of shaking, which is a crazy thing. Because as a friend said to me, you know, a friend, a woman named Catherine Casey, who works in Ghana for Acumen Fund, is just launching, we're just expanding into West Africa. And she's, you know, went there with a suitcase and a laptop to open up our office, you know, raise $5 million and execute a few investments. And she, in an email of support, said, look, the worst thing that happens is that you're more generous for a day. And that's it, right? But this idea of I'm going to tell people this thing is going to happen and it's not. I think it's a fear of embarrassment, a fear of failure, a fear of, you know, looking silly. But the thing is that people have very, very short memories. And what happens is what I at least have found is each time that I've done something that I found terrifying, the first thing that happens is, you know, whether it's somebody like Catherine Casey, whether it's our CEO, who's Jacqueline Novogratz, whether it's Seth Godin, whether it's my wife, the first thing that happens that people who are close to you and people who love you and want to see you succeed bolster you and push you and encourage you and try to help you. Because we recognize how rare it is, this opportunity to do something really special.
So going public, great idea you're suggesting. And public may not be necessarily blogging it to the world, but going public with maybe just a trusted mentor or a spouse.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I just, you know, the best way I've found to talk myself into doing something is telling five people that I'm doing it before I'm really ready to do it. So I think often we just need to start. We need to fail really often. We need to have lots and lots of ideas, most of which are bad. And we get into the habit of finding out that bad ideas don't cause any harm. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, they lead us to good ideas.
And so what do you dream about?
I mean, I dream about a lot of things. I really dream within the context of Acumen Fund that we will, you know, we have pioneered a new idea that seemed completely crazy in the beginning. And now there's an asset class around impact investing of, you know, almost 200 funds. JP Morgan is saying it could be a $1 trillion asset class, which is exciting to us, but only exciting in as much as tens of millions and hundreds of millions of low-income people can have the opportunity to live better lives. So we dream about having a global footprint, expanding into 10 geographies by 2015, and really demonstrating that there is an opportunity for patient capital as a mainstream opportunity to solve large-scale social problems. And, you know, that is really the thing that I wake up every day trying to chip away at and trying to help make happen.
Do you want to share something on the personal side?
You know, my wife is going to have a baby in about 10 days. So it'll be our third and, you know, knock on wood, it'll be as wonderful as the first two have been.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I've been with Sasha Dichter. He's the director of business development for the for Acumen Fund at acumenfund.org. Also a very popular and inspirational blogger and speaker. You'll find him at sashadichter.wordpress.com. Sasha, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks very much, Tony.
It's been a pleasure having you. Next week, legislative lookout, Perry Wasserman of 501C Strategies, a communications and lobbying firm in Washington, D.C., will be with me. We're going to talk about what's happening in Congress and the White House around nonprofits and charitable giving. I hope you'll listen next week with Perry Wasserman. Keep up with what's coming up from the show. Sign up for our insider email alerts on the Facebook page, facebook.com, Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. While you're there, click like. Please become a fan of the show. You know that you can find us on iTunes. Subscribe. Automatic downloads, of course. Listen anytime, any place on the device of your choice. You'll be directed to our iTunes page by going to nonprofitradio.net, nonprofitradio.net. The creative producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is Claire Meyerhoff. Our line producer and the owner of Talking Alternative Broadcasting is Sam Leibowitz. Our social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. Booker T and the MGs composed our theme music. We're grateful to them for doing that. This is Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Hope you'll listen next Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, always found at Talking Alternative Broadcasting, right here at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind over matter, health and fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind over matter, health and fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.